Good morning, and welcome to the New Media Show. My name is Todd Cochran. I'm joined by my co-host, Mr. Rob Greenlee. Good morning, Rob. How are you?
Doing fantastic, Todd. It's great. The New Media Show's right, or the New Media Expo's right around the corner, and it's in the podcasting space is still heating up. I think we've got a fantastic show today, and we've got two guests, but that's not to take anything away from who we have coming up first.
Yeah, and I think we've actually got some good topics to talk about today. Rob, you tweaked my motor this morning by linking to something from the Edison Research stuff. So we'll talk about that here in a little bit. But yep. I want to welcome this morning our guest is Brad Hill from Rain. Good morning, Brad. How are you?
Hello, Todd. Thanks for having me on today.
Yeah, absolutely. Glad to have you on and get you on the show and chit chat about the space in general. I think I had an interview. Just kind of start the topic off. I had an interview with Business Week on Tuesday, and it was a long one. Really, I mean, she spent an hour with me, and I kept telling the gal, I said, listen, you know, a lot of the reporters have been getting stuff wrong. I want to make sure, you know, from my perspective, you've got it right. And then if you have contradictory information from other folks, I'd like to come back. And we spent quite a while. And, she's getting hyped by people telling her that, some company she was interviewing was telling her that the podcasting or new media space was up like 50% year over year. I said, stop, slow down. It's up, but it's steadily up. It's not like exploding out of the blocks. The spin cycle right now, I love the spin cycle, but I just wish that the people that are quoting these types of numbers would settle down and talk to someone. First of all, to really ask what those numbers really are. You gotta love it, but I don't want them to get this false, because if they're pumping us up this high, this thing's just going to come crashing down when expectations aren't met. But anyway, Brad, I know you've been in the space a long, long time. You know, what's your perspective? What do you think's happening with the new media / podcasting space right now?
I think there's no question that awareness is growing. Again, I call it a resurgence. I remember 10 or so years ago when podcasting began, there was also a huge amount of publicity and promotion of it. It was a new technology, so the mechanics of delivering podcasts to listeners were new. Podcasts were associated with blogs, and blogging itself was still fairly new to the mainstream media consumption audience. So all of this newness created a lot of publicity and filled up news cycles on the internet. And then I think there transpired several years of reduced awareness and reduced media swirl around on-demand talk programming generally and podcasting. And in the last couple of years, there's definitely been a resurgence. Now, I get what you mean, Todd, about questioning what metrics somebody's actually talking about when they quote a percentage growth for the entire industry. That's a very tricky business. Measuring podcast consumption is difficult. Measuring the revenue that's flowing through the industry is difficult. So when somebody says 50% growth, there are a lot of question marks attached to that. But it is true that I think last year, especially toward the end of last year, that awareness of podcasting in the media and in the listening audience grew, and that on-demand talk programming is of great interest now to creators, to distributors, increasingly to advertisers. There's still a long way to go, as you say, but boy, there's nothing more exciting than seeing a lot of upside down the road, and I think that's where we are now. From our perspective at Rain, it is a key topic. You know, we're the leading trade organization for online audio generally, and our readership and our conference attendees, basically our constituency, is executives and people who work in the online audio industry and also broadcasters. And podcasting really straddles that fence very nicely. So, I was thinking about this last week because I was reviewing the articles that I published on Rain News. I'm the editor of the site. And I said to myself, my goodness, I wrote about podcasting a great deal. And I'm thinking even of next week, just putting up an op-ed, which I sometimes do, explaining why we're writing about podcasting so much and why people are talking about podcasting so much. And there's a great appetite for it. In our upcoming conference, Rain Summit West, which is April 12th in Las Vegas, if you don't mind me putting out that,
sure.
that small
oh,
plug,
sure.
We have two panels that deal directly with podcasting and with on-demand talk programming. One of them is called On Demand is In Demand, and it's hosted by Norm Pattis. I'm sure you know him. And has one of your recent guests, Andy Bowers, is going to be on the panel of
yep.
that. And Tom Likas, the renowned broadcaster turned podcaster now, he's going to be on it, Rob Cesternino. And we have another panel called You Should Talk, which is hosted by a radio executive, Steve Jones of ABC News. We can get into more detail of these things later if you want. But my point overall in this very long answer to your question is that there's demand from our audience and for information and awareness and tracking of an industry that really has become vital in the last year or two.
Brad, I wanted to ask you kind of, you know, and a big reason why I think you guys are really key to this is that you guys are the single source, I think, for this convergence that's happening between on-demand audio podcasting and the online radio side, which has been kind of separate worlds. I mean, a lot of podcasters don't really follow much on the online radio side or the online streaming side. And I think it's really fascinating that, you know, the last few summits that you guys have put on have had like a half focus on podcasting. And it's like, these worlds are finally starting to come together, and you're starting to see, you know, the online music streamers starting to embrace podcasting. So, to kind of sum up my question for you is, why do you see the convergence happening? And I know, you know, a lot of folks, including me, have been wanting this convergence to happen for a long time because it just didn't make any sense that there was a separation here. But why do you think it's happening now? And what kind of companies are jumping into the space that you're seeing that surprise you or you think it's a good time?
Mm-hmm. That's a great question, Rob. And you're right that online radio has, during its 10 or 15 years of existence, traditionally been associated with music. And now that is changing. And I think one of the reasons it's changing is that radio groups, and I'm thinking just right at this moment in particular, of NPR, are using podcasting and on-demand delivery mechanisms to distribute their programs, which originate on the air. So there's a natural tie-in. If you go to iTunes on any day, you'll see that a lot of the top 10 podcasts are archived radio shows. So there you go right there. That's a rock-solid bridge between radio and podcasting. And that when I was talking before about the early days of podcasting, that wasn't so much the case then. So I think that's one aspect of it. And there really is a natural tie-in in my mind and a natural opportunity for radio to get into online radio by means of repackaging and repurposing some of radio's talk programming. And I'm speaking now particularly of talk radio, which is obviously very strong with talk programming and has been for decades. So that's an opportunity for radio, I think. And we see CBS launching its Play It channel, which has CBS archived programs available, as well as externally produced material as well. So NPR is definitely a leader in this space, and but other radio groups also are getting into it. And you mentioned what companies are jumping in. Well, I think on the distribution side, what we see is the quick organization, a much higher level of organization of programming portfolios of shows, and ad networking capabilities. So the aggregation of audiences and selling across programs, selling multiple shows based on audience characteristics to advertisers. And that's an aspect, I think, of the resurgence of podcasting, is that there's more of a top-level organizational effort going on, and it's thriving. So you have Podcast One and Midroll Media and Gimlet and Andy Bowers' Panoply. So all of these things are, and Play It from CBS, these things are really being brought to market at an extraordinarily rapid pace. So it's a moving trend for sure.
You know, I think what we've seen too is that, and what I find interesting, and, you know, actually, I'm glad to see it, is for a while, the network model was not in vogue. Everyone was like, I got to go it alone. So it's finally, they're kind of realizing, or these groups are realizing, that there is value in doing that. And I've been, you know, bundling essentially for 10 years. And so I understand the power in it. The only thing that I think is going to be a challenge to those groups, and I keep saying, and Rob and I have had this discussion a few times, is that the bundling is of big shows is only going to be so many big shows. When you're looking at the top, you know, the top audience size shows, it probably makes up less than 5% of the total podcasting space. You know, when you have the, you know, I guess for a better word, the high number shows. So they're all going to be battling over this group of high performers. And obviously launching new shows and trying to duplicate that, and I understand that completely. But one thing that I keep watching, and one thing, and I want to, you know, as I was talking about, you know, in some recent interviews with folks, is basically saying, hey, there's, you know, there's 200,000 plus other shows out there that are reaching this massive audience, a much, much wider look at the, you know, from a audience perspective. And I think once the advertisers start to realize that there's only so much inventory in these big shows, I think it'll start trickling down, and they'll actually start reaching out once again to these smaller shows. They've largely, the media buyers are largely right now cherry picking big shows, which was complete, you know, that wasn't the case, you know, really. Well, this is a trend that's been going on for maybe 18 months. But that wasn't the case before. And before, they had a much wider view. I don't know if it's the media buyer's desire to get a big name and impress the boss that's part of the drive for the media buyers to sign the big shows. But, you know, I'm already getting contacted. You know, it's starting to switch. The media buyers are starting to say, well, what else have you got? And I'm like, well, have you been looking at the spreadsheet of 2,200 potential shows I've been sending you every month? And they're like, oh yeah, can you break that down for me? And finally they're starting to come back and ask for us to break it down. And so maybe we're going to start seeing insurgents of, you know, the smaller shows being monetized too.
Yeah, I think actually, let me interrupt because I have a question for you, Todd, about that. Sure. That's very interesting what you said. And, you know, part of it is old news, which is that in any media industry, a concentration of audience and money is at the top. Yeah. And then there's a long tail. And that's certainly the case with music and pretty much any other channel. Now, it seems to me that there's more than one challenge for podcasting. One is that tell me if I'm wrong. I think the dominant form of advertising is native host-read testimonial style advertising, because the audience knows the host, feels that it has an intimate relationship with the host, trusts the host. And the host that I've heard so many examples of hosts doing splendid jobs with this, where you really are engaged. And it's a great value for the advertiser because they're riding on the coattails of this trusting relationship between the host and the audience. And they've got a wonderful representative of their product who many times has tried the product and does personally. Right. You know, so all of this is going. But the challenge is that some of these excellent presentations of native advertising can exist in small audience programs. So it seems like if you cannot somehow sell across them and aggregate the audiences, that seems like one challenge.
Well,
let me just mention one other thing. When do you think brand advertising will enter into podcasting, which is more effectively, I imagine, sold across programs and across audiences?
Well, to answer your question, starting with the first question on the smaller shows, largely that's what we've been doing for 10 years. And we have the ability to go wide. You know, I've done as many as 400 or 500 shows on a single advertising buy. You obviously have, you know, shows of varying sizes that would be in that type of a campaign, and managing it is obviously a little more difficult. But, you know, from our perspective, that's in just an everyday, you know, walk in the park. We built those tools, have a campaign system, have the measurement data that's all in there to be able to support that. So being able to go wide in smaller shows is not a challenge. The only challenge is the, you know, basically to do some auditing and make sure the spots are good. But what we've found over the years in doing these very, very wide buys, not narrow and deep, but wide and, you know, a little more shallow, is that the performance on the campaigns is often better than the big shows. And it's because of just what you said, that relationship that content creator has with his audience. it's a little strange to think that you could have a relationship with 3,000 to 5,000 people. You wouldn't think there would be that much of a delta from a show that would have 50,000 or 100,000 listeners, but there really is. There's a divide, and it's just like when a show gets bigger, maybe it gets less personal. I don't know. Maybe that's the science behind it, but the smaller shows tend to have a higher engagement rate. Now, so far,
it seems to me, I'm interrupting again, sure. Sorry, my eagerness. It seems to me that then you've got a good ROI story to tell advertisers.
Oh, yeah.
Is the challenge getting them to listen?
The challenge is to get them to tell the boss, I just signed 400 shows, and the boss is going to be like, you know, I didn't know 400 shows existed to have podcast advertising. So I think that's the challenge. But, you know, that there's been huge, huge sums of money spent by some of the early advertisers going wide and had very, very successful campaigns. So there's great models, great stories, great white papers and all that to share. And we do. And it's just now kind of getting the media buyers to understand. You know, I had a media buyer call me and yell at me, why can't I get this show? And literally yelling at me. I'm like, he's booked for a year. He's full. He's sold out for a year. His inventory is gone. I says, if you want to book him, you have to book from 1 year from today now. And the guy was flabbergasted. I'm like, there's no inventory. So, you know, he's out and you're not getting in. And if you want to get in, you're going to pay big to get in. So this is what they're running up against now. So they're fighting for the crumbs. I shouldn't say crumbs. The fighting for the top shows has already begun. That just blows their mind, because what it is there's a lot more radio buyers. There's not a currency issue. In other words, there's plenty of inventory to be able to be bought in lots of time slots, and there's not in podcasting. Now, the other question was on, I'm sorry,
Advertisers.
Oh, yeah. The brand advertisers. They're coming, and they're starting to talk. But you're right. The direct response folks still make up the bulk of the advertising. We're getting ready to launch a big campaign with Harry's. Harry's has kind of figured it out. They're the folks that he's got shaving products. They're going wider, not as narrow. But Harry's is, again, direct response. They're not a brand advertiser. So we will see. And I'm starting to see the folks from Panoply, and I think Rob, even on Podcast One, there's some brand advertisers starting to come in. Yep. And if they do a good job, and if they're able to deliver, and the thing is, how do you measure brand advertising? And you're kind of left off the hook a little bit, because the measurement metrics aren't as stringent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think on the brand side, that also gets back to, and Brad, you know, jump in and give us your opinion on this, but as you look at the Rain Summit, you see a lot of the streaming radio folks, the back end technology providers like the Triton and the White Orbit and those, the AdsWiz folks jumping in here, because there is this coming wave of brand advertisers that are moving towards this space, and that is typically where a lot of big budgets are. And you know, give us your perspective on that movement, you know, that you're seeing in the space of these big players that have been providing back-end technology and ad insertion. Because we have to talk about ad insertion if we're going to talk about brand advertisers, because those guys want to be more targeted, right? So Is that a big part of what's happening here as far as what you're seeing too, Brad?
Rob, brand advertising want to be more targeted. They advertise on TV, for God's sake.
No, but they some of them do want to be very targeted, though, okay. Todd, and which means that they want to deliver to different parts of the country. Yeah. Oh. No, I know what you mean.
Well, demographic-wise, yeah, go ahead. Sorry, Rob. Yeah.
Well, I think that's right. I think every advertiser wants some extent of targeting, even if it's very broad-based. Coca-Cola, you know, is probably happy to reach just about everybody, but most or all advertisers want some kind of targeting. This is a key topic for audio, certainly. On the radio side, targeting, on the broadcast radio side, targeting has historically been on the blunt side. You know, a local radio station knows that its audience is local, but there's not much registration of users, for example, to radio webcasts. And so actual zip codes and age and gender of the audience is not well known on the radio side. And on the digital side, there are those providers. You mentioned Triton, and you mentioned, Triton is certainly a big one, and many others, AdsWiz. Everyone you mentioned is... attends our summits and often speaks at our summits. And both of those companies will be speaking at Rain Summit West on April 12th in Las Vegas. And I've lost track a little bit of what you asked. I know what I wanted to mention. The Triton Edison initiative, which was announced recently, that they will launch sometime this year, a podcast measurement system and try and standardize and unify the way podcast consumption is measured. And Todd, you must know this better than I do because you're actually in the business. But I hear from other people in the business too that the measurement of a play or a download, which are either completely different things or exactly the same thing, depending on who you talk to, is a very tricky business. And so I think it's smart of Triton and Edison to plant a stake in the ground here and try and put some order around that, because that's really how it's going to scale. I imagine that when you talk to advertisers, no matter how good a story you have to tell, the conversation must, I imagine, shift to what are your metrics? And maybe you have your own measurement system, and that's great. But advertisers who are scaling campaigns need to have metrics that they recognize from one platform to another and from one channel to another. This is an issue when it comes to online radio generally, comparing it to broadcast radio, for example. Advertisers, they just want to reach their customers. You know, they don't care that much about the platform. They want to know who the customer is and target their ads to them. So podcasting definitely has a challenge here in delivering metrics that advertisers can relate to.
Brad, the only people who have problem with metrics are those that don't have them. And I'm going to be honest with you. There's a campaign afoot by certain individuals in the podcasting space to disparage folks that have been in the measurement business for a long time. And because it doesn't fit their business model, the advertising metrics are not broken and have not been broken and have been very well dealt with, filtered, described. Again, I think what you have is you have individuals who don't like the numbers and want a different way to measure, and because it doesn't fit their business model. I'm just being very frank. I think that is exactly the case. Now, we know what the media buyers say, and in the direct response, what it ultimately comes down to, irregardless of any metric that's in the book, is did they deliver and did they turn over the number of, create the number of customers they thought they should in the amount of money that they paid for. In the end, that's probably the ultimate metric, and I don't think we've had any problem delivering on that either as a whole. But, we talked at length about the Triton Edison initiative. You know, they got several challenges. One, where are they going to get the data? You know, they only have access now really to their customers' data. Where's that data going to come from? It's going to be a bit, it's going to be interesting to see what they put together. And I'm sure whatever they put together will be formative. But at the same time, There's going to be a big meeting at the NAB by the IAB to talk about these exact issues. And I think what we know is that the language and the filtering is not that much different from client to client. That's actually doing it now, that actually has a system for on-demand, being able to break out actual percentages of media that's actually been actively listened to is easy. It's being done. I don't think there is there likes to be a lot of drama. People like to create a lot of drama, and when they create drama, they create doubt, and when they create doubt, then they can fly underneath the radar of reporting the data that they want to. I don't think in the long term it's going to stand. I think that there's two or three players in the space that have been in the space long enough that are going to stand up and said, no, this is wrong, irregardless of someone's business model. And it's becoming a little bit political, sadly. I'm pretty passionate about this because we live, breathe, and sleep advertising, and not advertising, but metrics 24/7. And so we'll see what they do. And we'll see chips will fall where they may lay, but there are definitely two camps of people that are in the space right now. One saying metrics suck, and one saying, what's wrong with the metrics? We've been doing metrics for a while. But again, that other camp has got a problem with the actual numbers.
Well, Todd, we've been actually through this once before. Oh, I mean, even
many times.
I mean, back to the Association of Downloadable Media.
But that group wasn't necessarily those major players.
No, it was completely different.
Right.
I mean, but nonetheless, that group fell apart too for a lot of reasons more related to self-interest.
Right.
And that's not so much,
well, I guess it is.
In some ways it's similar, right?
But at least you've got the IAB that's going to be sitting there acting as the arbitrator of this discussion. And I'm going to be there with my boxing gloves.
So Brad, I mean, we've seen this before. The Association of Downloadable Media was formed back in like 2009. I don't know if you remember that at all. I don't know if you guys covered it. I think maybe you guys wrote an article or two on it.
So that was before my time in Rain.
Was
but
it?
I do remember the formation of that.
Yeah. So that group basically wound up coming out with some standards, and a lot of what Todd's talking about is what came out of that group, and that group was comprised of a lot of the same players that are in the space today.
Those are complaining about stats are the ones that don't have them. It's okay. It's all good. I can sleep well at night.
But Brad, let's talk about Rain and Rain newsletter. I know that we haven't really talked too much about the scope and depth of what your news company in this space covers and what kind of topics. I know right on your front page today is a article on podcasting done by Larry Rosen from the Edison Research talking about podcasting being popular with millennials, which is really good news, I think. I don't know. What's your thought on it?
It's certainly interesting metrics from the Infinite Dial study. Rosen is an advisor to Rain and a good friend of ours. The millennials actually also, I think, it depends on how you categorize it, but also go a little bit older than that, 24. So that group encompasses millennials and the digital natives as well. Whether it's good news or bad is not for me to judge, but I do think it's interesting to see age demographic breakdowns for all of this stuff. And generally, if you look through the Infinite Dial study, which is publicly available now, the slides of it, which contain all the data that was presented in their webinar. Yes, thank you very much. There it is. If you look through those slides at the demographic portions, you see that almost everything skews young. Although the nation as a whole, the U.S. Adult and teen population is continually adopting streaming audio at an accelerating pace, the younger groups are really voraciously adopting it and building it into their lifestyles at a much greater rate than the older groups. So I guess that goes for podcasting as well. And I jotted down some other infinite dial statistics related to podcasts. And it's interesting. It shows, you know, Edison is making a pretty big deal of podcasting this year, but they've been measuring it for many, many years. So the trend line is moving upward at a steady pace. More than 50% of the population now listens to three or more podcast programs every week. I should say more than 50% of podcast listeners, not the entire population. But those who listen to podcasts are voracious about it. 89 million people, according to Edison, listen to podcasts somewhat, to some extent. That's 33% of the population, approximately. And a certain portion of podcast listeners, which Edison targets at 11%, 15%, listen to 11 or more shows a week. So in my mind, this might tie back to what you were saying earlier about the crossover between podcasting and radio, because I think of those people listening to 11 shows a week. And that's a lot of shows. And maybe I listen to 11. That's just about right. You know, 10 or 11 shows a week, probably. And some of that has replaced my radio listening. Some of it is archived shows, and some of it is internet-only programming that has never existed on radio and is separate from it. But the whole thing, the whole lifestyle element of listening to podcasts is, I think, displacing and or time-shifting radio listening. That's how I imagine the most early adopting, hungry consumer for this kind of on-demand talk programming. I have no idea whether I answered your question.
You know, I saw this number, and I'll be honest with you, this monthly podcasting listening age, and I want to read what it says on the slide. Monthly podcast listening age, percent listening to podcasts in the last month, age 12 to 24. It goes against everything. Everything I have in my database. Absolutely everything. And I'm talking about real audience demographic surveys where we're getting a good sampling rate. I'm be honest with you, I'm baffled. I'm blown away by this slide more than anything. The 55, if it was flipped, the 55 age group flipped with the 12 to 24, I would have probably no problem with the slide. But I'm going to tell you that the 25 and younger group is not listening to podcasts. They are not. I mean, they are, but in single digit percentages. And this goes,
now, Todd, let me just interject and ask you. So you're referring to survey results that you've got from surveying your audience of your network. Is that right?
Surveying thousands of our shows on our network. Actual physical surveys that they go online, click, 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 they click the survey from that audience. And because we have we know what the audience size is based on the metrics, we always know when we get a good 10% sampling or when it's below 10% and when, you know, that maybe the numbers will skew a little bit. But I'm just, I'm flabbergasted by this. Okay. And if you think about it, I got two, and then my teenagers, if anybody's going to listen to podcasts, my kids would. They're in the car listening to streaming music. They're listening to whatever's in their audio stuff. They are not listening to the radio. They're plugged in here, and you know, and I'm just flabbergasted by that slide. I really am. If it's true, then something has dramatically shifted in the last 90 days. I've pulled up the demographic data that we sent IAB, which was encompassed hundreds of thousands of responses in multiple categories. And looking right now at the music category, which you would think would probably attract the younger folks more, it's still in single-digit numbers of actual demographics of actual podcasts that at least we represent. I'm flabbergasted by this number.
Well, I've got an anecdote too, and believe me, I'm not trying to argue at all because you know this business better than I do. But this is just something that happened this week that I noted, and so I'm mentioning it just out of interest. I wrote an article about a patron-based crowdfunding platform.
Right.
You can contribute a dollar a month or a dollar a week or $5 a month or whatever you want to ongoing creative efforts. And it differs from Kickstarter because Kickstarter is mostly about singular ventures that you pledge money to.
Right.
So this is more of the patron model. And I wrote about this and how well suited it is to podcasting because podcasting is an ongoing creative effort. And so it needs ongoing funding as well. And I mentioned one show in one of the platforms that's doing pretty well. And I said, what this really reveals that, interestingly, that there's an audience of people who are willing to spend as much money as the average American spends on music in a year and funding a show that they really like. So that was all very interesting. And I put it up and I tweeted the article. And a few minutes after I did that, my nephew, who fits into this demographic, early 20s, I think he is, tweeted back saying that he supports financially that show that I use as an example and several others. And that gave me pause. That made me think, wow, here's this guy. I know him well. And he's always been deep into music. He considered being a music producer for a while as a career. And he's been in a band and he's managed a band. And he is pouring money and listening time into podcast programs kind of at the grassroots level. So I offer that just as an interesting anecdote of at least one person
right.
Who's young and who is very involved.
You know, Rob, what do you think of that number?
Well, Todd, I think if you look at these numbers too, I tend to agree with you in some regards that that these numbers skew older. So that age group, 12 to 24, I think it's reasonable to say that most of that number is in the 24 range, not in the 12 range, and then the ages 25 to 54, that's going to be more in the mid-30s range is where that number is. So I think if you look at these numbers, and Todd, your sample is a little different than the Edison sample,
right,
I think.
Right.
Where that sample is coming from and how that's gathered, I think is the key question there. And it's hard to, that's the thing about surveys, right? They're
yep.
surveys.
Yeah.
They aren't exact. Now, granted, yours are a little more exact, but those could be those could be skewed based on who your content
sure.
providers are, too,
sure.
right?
And I just see it. I when I tell advertisers, don't even think about advertising to that 25 and below. They're not in. That's why I tell advertisers every day. And I'm obviously going to go back and re-pull data, but. I don't know. Okay. So if it, let's just say this number's right on, dead on. Let's say that's the actual percentage number. That's a group that largely doesn't have a lot of money most of the time.
Yeah.
Now the patron thing, that's great. I think that fits with the $5-$10 a month was for someone in that age group. But, these are early, folks are just coming out of college. They are starting to have a little bit of disposable income, but not a lot. So, I don't know if that's going to help us or not with that number.
Well, Todd, it'd be interesting to see what that chart would look like if the age range was 12 to 18 and 19 to like 44. What would be that distribution at that point?
Because of legalities, we don't even ask. For an under 18, our survey starts 18 to 25. That's where we start.
Yeah,
we don't even ask anybody for their age group below 18. So we would think though that in our data that it would be, those 12-year-olds or 13 or 15-year-olds would come in and click the, the 18 box. I don't know, but I don't know. It's an interesting data, and I just it baffles me because I don't think I've ever seen a show. Maybe a few MuggleCast and a few of those shows that really target younger folks, skewing young, those shows obviously would, but I think the majority of shows, I can guarantee it, 24 and below are not listening to my tech show.
No, that's definitely true. Though there has been a surge in kind of YouTube celebrities creating podcasts.
Right.
You know, like Tyler Oakley, which definitely appeals to that 18 to 24 demo. He was in like the top five most popular podcasts for a long time here over this past year. So, I mean, I think that there are examples of, you know, the Snooki podcast. There are examples of podcasters that are coming out of the younger age group or appeal to a younger age group that are starting to tune into podcasting. And that's where it gets back to, is where's the sample coming from?
Yeah. Hey, Rob, we're already 40 minutes in, believe it or not. So we need to ask, I guess, Brad, then on your guys' upcoming conference, if people want to come to that or get more information, how do they do that?
Oh, they do it so easily. The best on-ramp to the conference is to clear your schedule for April 12th. we're co-located with the NAB show.
Oh, okay.
So, and that starts the next day, the 13th. So go to rainnews.com. For anybody who doesn't know, rain is spelled just like precipitation. There it is. Thank you so much. Rainnews.com. And click summits over there next to the home main navigation.
It's right at the top.
This is so helpful, guys. Thank you. And then Rain Summit West, if you click that, you're really doing the heavy lifting for me.
And you can register.
And then that page gives you all the information. You see some of our speakers, our agenda. If you scroll down over on the right there is the registration panel. Click that. And you go to it. I want to tell you, there's really nothing like it, like our RAIN summits. We regard them, and everybody else does too, as the preeminent networking and information events for the streaming audio industry. And that covers podcasting and music and everything else. And the networking part should not be underestimated, because we hear again and again from our attendees that they get the best networking bang for their buck at RAIN summits. We intentionally create networking time during the day just specifically for people to mill around and talk and meet each other. And lest I forget to mention it, the cocktail party at the end by the pool is absolutely famous. So we have a lot of fun. And at the same time, the day is packed with the industry's leading experts, panels, research reports, keynote addresses. The keynote this year is from Anthony Bay, the CEO of RDO. And as I mentioned before, two panels that are specifically about podcasting and on-demand talk. So it is a fabulous event. It's not expensive. And if you're going to be in Vegas for the NAB show anyway, if you register by the end of this week, you get some NAB perks, either $100 off the registration or a free exhibition pass, exhibit hall pass. So there's a long answer. Thanks for the time to let me talk about that. It really is a key event every year for the industry.
Well, I'm glad it's going to happen during NAB, because I'm going to be able to go. So I've never been to one of your events, so I'm going to register today and be able to meet you in person. It should be great.
Wonderful, Todd. Thank you.
Yeah. It's I tell you, we can spend a lot of time talking about this space. I appreciate you coming on with us today. Rob, how much time do we have before Bob's coming on?
Bob's coming on at the top of the hour.
Oh, we got a few more minutes then. All right. Yep. So I thought we were rushed here.
I didn't put him together that close.
Okay. Yeah. So cool. So Brad, I think the thing that, excites me to, irregardless of demographic numbers or the argument about metrics or any of this other stuff that's going on behind the scenes, is really that the space is on the move. Rob, I know, is head hopeful that we'd start to see more mainstream broadcasters coming on. What are you hearing from the regular traditional radio folks? Are you seeing them starting to migrate, or are you hearing them talk about it, or?
Well, I agree that that we're waiting for that to happen. And mostly what I see is a lot of creative activity. There are one or two highlights, and one of them is Tom Likas. I mentioned him before just because he's going to be on one of our panels. And Tom was a very popular attraction on broadcast radio, and the formatting of his station changed, and his show ended. And he was on a non-compete for a while, so in his own description, he sat back and collected money for a while, but was eager to get back to work and re-engage an audience with a program, so he leaped into podcasting. And so that's an example of broadcast talent that has gotten into the space. And I think that there is a groundswell of new creative effort. And it's always going to be a combination, I think, of time-shifted content that is migrated over from radio and original content that comes either from radio, as Serial did, which is an internet-only program, but came from radio producers, and pure-play internet programming that just springs up from the weeds, as it were. But it's a great opportunity for radio. I agree with you about that. There's so much talk content, and any time a market develops where you have an opportunity to repackage programming that you've already produced and find new audiences with it and escape geographical boundaries with it, that's like gold. It's a golden market, a golden opportunity. So I do think it's key for radio to recognize that and jump into it. CBS, as we mentioned, with the play.it platform seems to be moving in that direction.
Yeah, and we've talked about that for, you know, a few times on the show, that the broadcast radio sites have a challenge around they create a lot of local programming, where podcasting is national and global, and a lot of them have a struggle with the whole national talent aspect and trying to build shows. And I know that the CBS folks are wrestling with that issue as well, and it's forcing them to create new programming.
Well, we have to, give credit where credit's due. You know, some of these folks that are on the national level from a talk side, they're very talented. And we can only hope that they're able to bring, those audiences and bring their awareness. Can you just imagine having, the top 10 radio talk show hosts, whether it be, conservative talk radio or Tech Help or whatever it may be, that they're out there in the airwaves saying, hey, I want you to subscribe to my podcast, and every time they said that, reaching those mass audiences, it can only help. You look at when Larry King was still on at CNN, of course, he's been gone for a long time. He would tell everyone in his show to listen to his podcast, and just hope that more folks like that do and continue to build the awareness. It's going to be good for all, because we're all going to rise together. As we bring more people in.
I wonder if this is similar to the growth trajectory of blogging. I'm now thinking out loud, so tell me, you guys, what you think of this. Blogging started as mostly a grassroots platform where people could quickly publish content on the internet and on a website without having to know about FTP uploads or HTML coding or any of that. And the traditional blog format is reverse chronology publishing, so it's kind of like a journal. And in fact, many of the early blogs were just personal journals, people treating it like a public diary. Very small audiences, long, long tail of blogs. But then it became professionalized, and it became more professional in quality, more organized in the topics it covered, less personal, more objective, more reporting came into it. Blogs had a period where they were struggling to gain authority in the news space, and they did eventually. And now, and then institutions adopted blogging, either just the format of blogging, the reverse chronology, fast, quick-paced publishing of content, or actual blogs that contained the cultural elements of personal opinion and comment. So blogging became commercialized and professionalized over time. And I wonder if podcasting will follow a similar adoption curve. Of course, podcasting has been around for almost as long as blogging. But I wonder still, as it changes from grassroots to professional and gains more authority as content that is viable standing next to radio and next to other things. Boy, I'm really thinking out loud here. But we see it happening. We see it with NPR adopting podcasting and with other institutions as well. So I just wonder whether that curve is being followed. And as I think out loud, I'm also remembering another example of a radio personality who's moved into the podcasting space, and that's Russell Brand, who recently signed an exclusive agreement with Audio Boom, a podcast distribution and production platform. Yeah. And at the beginning of Brand's programs, so far. I think there have been five of them so far. It's relatively new. He jokes with his co-host about, oh, we used to be in a radio studio and all the equipment was gleaming, and now we're in a basement and we're sitting at a table with only three legs and things like this. So they're kind of making a big deal about podcasting being more informal, as if they were stepping down into it. But I think this is really just a clever ploy to adopt the more personal space and bring the listener into the room with the hosts. There's a lot of off-the-cuff thinking out loud for you guys. What do you think?
Well, I think that your thoughts on an analogy with blogging, I think it's an interesting one, because I think as you think about blogging today, blogging has really just turned into it's more of an efficient way of creating a website, right? People don't think of blogs anymore. They basically think, well, that's just how you make a website, right? People don't build websites that often from scratch anymore. So blogging basically just became a more efficient way of creating a website, and that's how people refer to them today. And I guess if you're trying to extend that analogy out to podcasting, I think what we're seeing is a similar thing happen, though I don't think it's going to be called, you know, radio. I think it's going to be called is just on-demand audio, I think, is where all the trend lines are going. So it is going to be something new, I believe, on the audio side. It isn't going to be just all of a sudden blogs become websites. It's not going to be analogy.
I think the point is that the platform mechanics stop mattering after a while, and it's really all about the content. And from what you said, I think that really crystallizes it in my mind. And, the listeners don't care really about platforms, or at least they don't want to care. They have to care now, because the whole industry has so many independent platforms, and you have to really approach each one individually to get what you want. But I remember speaking with Simon Cole at our summit in London last year, and he was talking about the entertain me button as a theoretical construct where, you know, you're not going to a podcast network or to Stitcher or to Pandora or anything. You're just hitting a big button that knows you and gives you what you want. And so that ideally is the consumer proposition, is that it's all about the content.
Yep.
It's got to be as easy as what people are used to in the car with radio, right? It just needs to come on and play what you like to listen to.
And we're getting there. That's the good thing.
Yeah. Agreed.
And the car is going to be key. We haven't mentioned the car, but there you go. I mean, when it comes to adoption, who's listening to what, the car is enormously important. And you have recent studies saying that, well, people in America like the way their cars are now, and they want to keep push-button radios. You've got to remember that the average age of a car in America is 11 and a half years. So when you do surveys about what people like in their cars, you're really surveying a dozen years in the past.
Yep.
And people like what they know. And cars are going to become digitized. They are becoming digitized. So people will get to know these things better.
And if they're not, they're being digitized by what's being in their pockets.
Exactly.
Yeah, I like to call them rolling iPads. Yeah. What I like to call them. That's the direction that this is all going. Yeah,
I know. They're like consumer electronics devices. And in the last CES this year, that was really evident. There were seven car companies, I think, taking up hundreds of thousands of square feet on the floor.
They were. Well, Brad, thanks for coming on. And, you know, everyone, if you're going to be at NMX/NAB and you want to hang out with some cool folks and hear what's going on in the space, get a little early taste, go to the RAIN Summit. You can, again, find information about that at rainnews.com. Definitely subscribe to their site. There's lots of great, enticing articles that come out almost on a daily basis. And, and definitely get over there, and because just gives you, especially if you're scope locked on the podcasting space, it's better to see what's going on around you to know what's coming. And so definitely subscribe over there.
Thank you, Todd. Hey, thanks to you, Rob, too. It was really a pleasure to be on.
Brad, thanks for taking time out of your morning, and we appreciate you coming on.
Thank you, Brad, for coming on. It was great to.
So I think I'll just sign off here.
Oh, that was fast and furious.
It was. Well, one thing is for sure, we can fill up some time on the show.
Hey, there was a question in the chat room.
Yeah.
Said, greetings, IMO play and downloads are two different things. That's true. I have downloaded podcasts that I never get a chance to listen to due to the constraints. Advertisers would like to know if podcasts are actually being listened to. It also is a better selling point for the content creators that their shows are actually being listened. Problem is we can't get that data out. Once it's downloaded, there's no way to get that data out of Apple with Apple controlling 85% of the market. So you're right. But if we were only going to bill the advertiser based on plays, a lot of companies would go out of business because the majority, still the high majority of downloads, high majority of on-demand is coming from previously downloaded media.
And yeah, the only source of that data would be is if the client level, that's at the device level, right, basically reports play information back to the source of the content.
Right.
And that nobody's architected that into their platform, you know, except for maybe Apple.
Well, Apple hasn't. Well, they're probably getting the data, but they're not sharing.
Yeah, exactly. And there's probably a lot of other apps that are playing podcasts that are getting that data, but they're not sharing either.
But most of them are not knowing what to do with it. That's what we're finding.
Yeah, there's no place to share it to, right?
Right.
In reality, that's part of what needs to be created is some central repository, third party, you know, database that can get that data. So there's a new business model there for you.
Yeah, it's not necessarily new.
No, it's not new, but it's still out there. Yeah.
And some of that's already being done, but I will stop at that point from saying anymore.
Oh, really? Okay. Okay. Little leak there, I would say.
Not leak, just, you know, our secret sauce is much deeper than what people think.
Todd, you're such a schemer.
Not a schemer, just fact.
I know it is.
You know, just fact. You know, it just drives me crazy, some of the stuff I'm seeing. Yeah. It's like this lady from, I hope she comes up with a great article. And I spent enough time with her to, you know.
So that article's with Business Week, is that what you said?
Yeah, Business Week, yeah. So she's talking to a few people, so it should be pretty in-depth. Do I get one line? I'll probably get a sentence out of a whole hour's worth of discussion. You know how that goes.
Yeah, I've had that happen before, too. So we've got another guest coming up. We have Bob Heil, who's the founder and creator of Heil Sound, who created and popularized the Heil PR40, which lots of podcasters in the podcasting space use today.
And I have
he's going to come on here at the top of the hour.
I have a Heil Boom here, too.
Yep. And so he's going to be on here soon to give us a little bit of history on this and how the Heil PR40 came into existence and how it got popularized. I think if you've been around the podcasting space for a while, you probably know how that happened. But if you haven't been, then this will be new to you.
Well, you know who Leo got his first PR40 from. Well, we'll save that.
Yeah.
So anyway, it'd be fun talking with Bob. He's probably going to ask me why I'm not using a PR40.
Well, the same with me. I've got a Shure here. So
I've got a PR40 up there. It's up in
I have noticed that this Shure, the SM7B, has kind of become probably a more popular microphone in the podcasting space than even the Heil PR40 at this point. I'm seeing it more out there than ever.
Well, it's got good side lobe pickup. You can stick it off the side, where this one here, I have to be almost straight on it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's an unusual mic, so you can kind of see it there. See, it's got it's got an open kind of diaphragm there that can get the audio from a lot of different directions. So I think it's a popular radio mic as well. You know, I know Podcast One uses this mic. I know a lot of the mid-roll shows use this mic. So it's the Shure SM7B is what it is. It's about $350. But there's certainly nothing wrong with the Heil PR40. I think, you know, you need to really look at it from a your voice and what sounds good with your voice.
Bob was trying to dial in at 620.
Oh, he was? Okay.
I wonder if he got the time wrong. Hey, Bob, can you hear us? Hey, Bob, can you hear us?
Yeah, are you hearing me?
Yeah, I'm hearing
yes,
you.
Yes, Bob. Yeah,
hearing you great. Yeah, we're hearing you. Can you hear us again?
I'm really having internet problems today, so it's not going to happen.
Is your connection not doing well? We're hearing you okay, though.
Yep.
He must have, yeah, very interesting. Oh, that's why I was
confused. Are you there?
Yeah, we're here.
Yes.
Can you hear us? I thought he heard us there in the beginning.
Did he?
Bob, okay. We can hear you. I guess you're not hearing us clearly then, right? Hmm.
Yeah, he's fading in and fading out on us.
Well, that's too bad.
I know. Shoot.
Hey, Bob, if you can hear us... It keeps on reconnecting.
Oh, okay. It's a bandwidth issue then.
Yeah, it might be a bandwidth issue. And I got him on audio only right now, so it appears the internet is not cooperating.
Ah. Did you hear that? We'll have to reschedule.
Okay, Bob. Thanks. Sorry we're having connection problems. I apologize we weren't able to get through to you, and we'll set up an alternate way for you to get in next time as well. Ah, I'm bummed.
Yeah, I know.
Oh man, that sucks.
Well, let's keep trying. Maybe it'll get better here in a second.
Yeah. Can you? I know it dialed back in.
I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, we can hear you just fine. I guess you can't hear us. Yeah. Yeah, you're clear as day, Bob, so I'm not sure. Hmm.
We will reschedule.
Okay. All right, we'll reschedule. Is there another way I can get him in? Let me, Rob, you carry it out. I'll send him a chat.
Okay. So I don't, hold down the show myself here.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, the Rain Summit coming up, that's going to be held in the Westgate Hotel right next to the convention center. So if you're staying at the Westgate, that'd be a really, convenient, kind of event to go to. I'm not sure that a lot of podcasters know about that summit.
Yeah.
And I think it's an important one for the industry. That's where a lot of the new up and coming kind of bigger players are getting together. So it is a little bit of a different group than what's over at the New Media Expo. So, that's part of why I wanted to bring attention to it here was, there is another event going on that's focused on kind of the bigger players in podcasting.
And it's $175, and it lasts from 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. And so I'm just looking at the website here on the Rain Summit website. So not bad. Should be a good value for the day. Yeah. I mean, I'm just trying to figure out if I can fit it in my schedule. My schedule's insane already.
Yeah.
You know, so I just have to keep our fingers crossed here. But anyway, so Rob, what's been going on this week with you for the space? Anything new?
Oh, just trying to plan for the New Media Expo, trying to get stuff pulled together for that. So it's, it's coming up pretty quick,
And I've got a session that I have to start working on my speech. My presentation is pretty involved. So I gotta, it's going to take me a couple of weeks to get it together. So I guess I should start. I should start getting it together. It's, we've been so wrapped around the axle on, trying to get ready for the show as well. I don't know if I told you, we hired a new programmer She starts tomorrow. We've already got a new gal in the office as well. So, you know, we've been adding people. And so, you know, there's always a little bit of, you know, busyness that evolves around that and getting people up to speed. It's kind of interesting. The gal that we hired, Mackenzie, she has taken over our affiliate stuff and along with a whole bunch of other stuff and just pile it on. She's like been drinking from the fire hose for 2 weeks.
Wow.
You know, you tried to think, you take someone that has never, and it's actually kind of been an interesting exercise because she had a radio background, but no exposure at all to the podcasting space. So when we hired her, I basically gave her some tasks and getting up to speed. But at the same time, I had to go through and like set up PowerPress and just cold. I wanted her to use our documentation and our instructions. That's good. It's always good to have someone that's never, ever been in the space and it's trying to figure out how to set things up. So you're going to see some major UI changes from us going forward. Based on just her feedback to try to make it easier for folks, you know, and lower the pain bar and getting stuff set up and make it more, you know, step by step exactly what they need to do. And so it's good to get those types of eyeballs, someone fresh, because we got a lot of people coming into space and they still have some of the same challenges that they used to have. And our goal is to make sure they get started on the right foot. You know, I don't want them running off and getting locked into a platform that, for better word, makes it painful when they decide they need to move 90 days later, which, you know, happens all the time. We move a lot of podcasters that said, I should have never started here where I started. And so we're trying to make it so that right off the get-go, people do the right steps, or at least what we in our DNA feel are the right steps to getting started. I think that's a big challenge and part of it too. People getting discouraged. If it's too hard, they just say, forget it.
Yeah, that's true. You know, and that's what you have to go through if you want to do things correctly and do things right. Yeah.
And the amount of bad advice that's out there is growing too. It's every Dick, Tom, and Harry has suggestions and this is how I've done it, and it's like this trickle down effect. Let's say you've got a Jedi podcaster that instructs someone to do something, and then they in turn two or three, four times removed, and the next thing you're like, oh my god, why did they say that? Podcast consultants drive a lot of podcast consultation business to us. You know, it's kind of an it's sad because they've spent money twice.
Yeah. Well, and we've seen this before.
Right? Yeah,
The early days of podcasting, there was a rush to them consulting and things like that, and a lot of new people jumped into it, and a lot of people that really didn't have any experience doing podcasting jumped into it because they saw it as a way to, you know, bring in some income to themselves. And.
And you know,
and some know more about doing it than others.
And there's some great folks out there, you know, and that are doing a good job at it. But there's just a few that consistently give bad advice. And I think the main thing too, you know, we try to give people options and not, I don't care what hosting company a podcaster goes with. That's their decision. And obviously, we'd love to have use our stuff, but at the same time. Try to just give them the information that here's your options, here's what you can do, here's how you can get set up, these are probably the better steps, and gentle suggestions. And because if you start dictating someone, you know, that's never good. And I found too that podcasters, of course, are very, very opinionated, and luckily they're very loyal too, so that helps you sometimes and works against you sometimes. So I still continue to see people now signing. You know, there's a few new services out there where people are signing up and using those services, RSS feeds, and it's a pet peeve of mine that I have a hard time controlling.
Yeah,
it drives me absolutely crazy. But there was an update to Feedburner. Feedburner did a cosmetic update, didn't they?
I think it was they added Feedly, I think, a Feedly link in there. But Daniel J. Lewis chimed in on that thread of conversation and said that'd been in there a while.
Oh.
So I think it's happened probably fairly recently, but not, you know, that recent, right? It wasn't like it happened last week or anything.
Well, after they screwed everybody and took Reader down, and they probably had to provide some sort of option. They probably got so much feedback on that they had to give some sort of a, you know, recommend somebody.
Yeah. So I also, I came across another company, and they're actually a sponsor of the Rain Summit. There's a company called Omni App at omniapp.com. It's basically, you know, from what I'm gathering from it, it's basically a podcasting and kind of radio show aggregator of sorts.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure that many in the podcasting space know that it exists. It's out of Australia. I'm trying to kind of piece together what all they do. But it's it's another player in the space that's got an online site that is aggregating shows.
Hmm.
It's really irritating when you pull to the bottom of their homepage, though. It keeps filling in with shows, and you can never get to their bottom nav area.
But mine didn't do that. That's weird.
But anyway, it's kind of a usability issue, I would say. But anyway, it's just another player in the space, right? That's jumped in and is aggregating shows that are being created on their platform, as well as pulling in outside shows.
Right. So they're aggregating some stuff and... Huh. So interesting. And they got a big player across the bottom of the page, which is interesting because it continues to play after... it basically you continue to search around. I like that. I really do. I like that feature a lot.
And then another big player in the space, and I'm not sure a lot of the U.S. podcasters know about, is Audio Boom. And it's the one that Brad mentioned has Russell Brand,
right,
as a podcaster. But it also is a kind of a creation platform as well. So you can create it's a lot like Spreaker in some ways. A lot like Blog Talk Radio, create a, a radio show of sorts.
Right.
But it supports podcasting. It has a podcasting, it generates a feed. You can create a show in here. But I wouldn't say it's robust. I would say it's probably more in line with like a SoundCloud as far as its support for podcasting.
Right.
It's more of a add-on than it is a core.
I see they aggregate some stuff too.
Yeah. But it's a pretty popular, it's had a lot of VC investment out of the UK. It's pretty popular in Europe.
It's interesting, all this European investment in the space.
Yeah, there's Spreaker, there's SoundCloud out of, both those companies are out of Berlin.
Yep.
So obviously the UK has always been a big player in the on-demand audio podcasting space, with the BBC, that I would say is probably the biggest podcaster in the world.
Who is that?
The BBC.
Oh, yeah. As a whole, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. So, and they don't get talked a lot about in this space. There isn't a lot of kind of involvement of the BBC in the podcast community.
Well, they have a different charter.
Yeah.
They're supported, government supported by everyone paying a license fee. And, so they don't necessarily have to be advertiser supported. They're government supported, taxpayer supported.
Their charter is to create terrific content and make it available to their citizens and to some extent outside of the U.S. or outside of the U.K. Like a lot of their music shows can't be listened to outside of the U.S. Or outside of the U.K. I keep kind of mixing those up. They've obviously achieved a lot of success here in the U.S. as well. But there are other players, you know, that are in Europe, and I think, you know, those are going to be on display at the New Media Europe event that's coming up here.
Are you thinking about going to that, Rob?
Not at this point, no.
Yeah, they've reached out to us wanting to know if we want to sponsor, and you know, they won't tell me, you know, what their numbers are, and I don't know. I know Spreaker sponsored them. But I have no idea, you know, what they've got. WordPress.org, DocuSign, Podcast One is now a sponsor. That's interesting. School of Podcasting, huh? So it must be the entry level must be pretty low then to get in. Actually, vendor list is growing. Oh, Libsyn's going to go? Wow. Oh, they got us. Oh, no. I'm looking at the wrong. Jesus. Duh. You know, I'm looking at the New Media Expo site, and I was like, wow, New Media Europe's doing great.
Yeah. Well, you know, Cliff Ravenscraft is going to be a keynote there.
Cliff has kind of fell off the radar. I just don't hear anybody. What is Cliff doing anyway? Do we know?
Well, if you go to his website, Podcast Answer Man.
Yeah, but I just have not hearing about, you know, I don't hear him. He was really, of course, he's went to this pay model thing. So I wonder if that, I know he still does his free. He's still doing it. He's still doing his show. I know he's playing with Mercat. I can see that on his website.
That's a flash in the pan for South by Southwest. Yeah, I've seen that same phenomenon happen with South by like three times now, where those live video streaming apps become popular at South by.
Yeah.
And then after South by, they just fall off the radar entirely. And I think that's what's going to happen to Mercat.
Right. So interesting. So Cliff's talking about some of the stuff I was talking about, the other podcast hijacking on YouTube, which has continued to go on. Of course, I'm on, he's got my show listed. I haven't been hijacked. It wasn't my show. It's all his shows. So yeah, I just haven't heard too much from Cliff lately. So I don't know what he's up to.
Well, he's not involved as much in the podcaster community at large is what. Yeah.
I think he's still going after affiliate marketing type stuff and the masterminds and you know stuff that leads to money.
Yep.
So, but he still does a show, so he's still he's still got a public show available, so that hasn't changed at all. No, he's on a big weight loss. I know that's something I seen on Facebook. He's doing a lot of weight loss stuff. He's lost a lot of weight, so he's doing good. So I congratulate him on that.
Yeah, and he's going to be a speaker at the New Media Expo, as well as like I said the.
Oh, has he got a session?
Yeah,
I haven't looked to see. We should probably talk a little bit about New Media Expo and what's going on over there. they've of course they're right now at probably at crunch time and getting ready to go for the event. And let's see here. Their website did change. It did finally update. You can see that they put a new design on. So it's got that new one page type design that is coming on. So I don't know if these are the actual speaker list. You got Adam. You've got a variety of different folks there. So of course, this event, the New Media Expo, is larger than just podcasters. It's a it's an event for bloggers and YouTubers too. So let's look to see if we can look at the schedule. Is the schedule up? Oh, okay, there it goes. Finally loaded. So how can we tell?
Conference grid.
Yeah, so let's see here. If we look at select a key trend. Huh. Not very innovative from a, yes, you just have to look at the sessions here.
Yeah, it doesn't, the grid doesn't necessarily play well in browsers either.
Yeah, I'm just trying to look at, so let's just search for podcasts and see what comes up. Whoops, helps if I spell it right. So 32 sessions matching. And let's look at some of the sessions here. We've got Apple iBooks and iTunes, What You Need to Know, Podcasting Techniques, Growing Your Audience, Practical Tips, People Buy You, All That Marketing Advice for Your Podcast. Is that supposed to be Is BS? Podcasting the Next 10 Years. Is that mine? That's not the title of my session. No, that's Tom. Oh, that's funny. The New Media Show. So this is us. So we're Tuesday at 11 to 11:45, Rob.
Okay.
So it, we're in Ballroom D. So now we know what our time of our schedule is.
Yeah, I think I had that. So that's the 14th. Yeah, I think I had that written down before.
Let's see what else. Getting the most from the microphone, multi-purpose content, 7 lessons that can transform your podcast. Of course, the podcast awards. How to get your first 100,000 podcast downloads. Oh, that's interesting. Who's telling us how to do that? Grant Baldwin? Do we even know? Who's Grant Baldwin?
I have no idea.
I've never heard of him. I think you have to have 100,000 people to tell people how to get 100,000 people. How to build a community that grows your influence beyond download strategies. Building podcast communities. There's mine, 10 years/1,000 episodes, then, now, in the future. So I'm on Wednesday at 11:30 to 12:15. So they don't have a picture of me for some reason. SEO for podcasters. Who am I competing with on that day? Let's look out. It's always good to see who you're competing with. Building a podcast community that doesn't suck. Building download, beyond download strategies. So who are the two people that my time slot I'm competing against? Well, that's me. Duh. Rob. Rob is a podcast. And Jessica. So, two formidable speakers. it's always good to see that. Envisioning audio podcasting as permanent mainstream. New ideas for old blogs, lessons from radio and podcasting. I don't see any. Where's the instructional sessions?
Yeah.
Not many instructional. That's concerning to me. I don't know. Not very many instructional, you know, but maybe they feel we're beyond that.
Yeah, I see on our New Media Show page, State of Podcasting, our description isn't quite up there yet.
Oh,
what the session's about.
It's not quite right.
And in your name and Rob Walsh's name is not listed yet. So I'll have to
ping Deb.
Yeah, I'll have to reach out to him about all that. It's all been sent in. It's just.
Yep. So it needs to be updated.
This needs to be added.
Let's look at the sponsor list. We got bronze sponsors, WordPress. We've got conference sponsors. And then we got media partners. So the sponsor list is pretty short, too. So, well, we will see what the show turns out. We'll see how it is. I'm sure it's going to be a lot of fun. Being with NAB is just huge, you know, from a exhibiting standpoint, from my point of view, it's going to be huge.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how many people venture over to that, you know, from the NAB and are actually going to even be aware of it.
Well,
you know,
it all looks like the same show floor. There's no dividers. You're going to walk.
No, but I mean, I'm talking about the conference sessions and things like that. Is there going to be a big influence from NAB, you know, attendees coming over to this show, right?
Gotcha.
I think that's a big question.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it is. And because I think their full pass people get access to our stuff as well. So I don't know if that works vice versa or not. I don't know if a New Media Expo session holder can go to NAB sessions as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll have to ask. We'll have to ask those folks that. But anyway, so next week we're off. I'm going to be in an airplane coming back to Honolulu, flying back from the East Coast. I'll be in Washington, D.C. next week. Matter of fact, I leave tonight. In about 12 hours from now, I'll be jetting that way. Not the red eye, but it'll turn into the red eye by the time I get there. So I'll be in D.C. all next week, Rob.
Okay.
As we know, and then we'll push
Washington, D.C. Interesting place for you to be.
Yes. Yeah. And a few places in between. So that puts us really about two shows. So here, there'll be April 4th, and actually, there might be only one more show before NMX, because I think I leave for Vegas on Friday the 10th. When are you coming down? Because, you know, we're bringing part of our team, so we're going to have some meetings, too. What day are you getting into Vegas?
I'm flying in early morning on Sunday the 12th.
Okay. Yeah, I leave Friday night, so they're probably, unless we can figure out a way to do something remote, there'll be no show. So really, one more show between now and New Media Expo. Do we want to try to reach out to Rick and see if we can get some NMX people on prior to that? Do you think that's a good pipper before the event?
Yeah, let's try and make the show on April 4th a blockbuster for the New Media Expo.
Yeah.
And see, so get on Rick and maybe Dave and try and do that, unless there's somebody else, but I think, you know, and maybe both those guys.
And if you want, I can still do a show on the 29th. That's Sunday, you know, after I get back. So if you want to do something Sunday, if you have somebody lined up, I'm more than happy to do something that morning. It's usually hard to get people on Sunday mornings, though.
Yeah. Well, it's hard to get people on Saturday mornings, too.
Yeah. Leo doesn't seem to have any trouble getting people Sunday afternoon.
Well, that's true. That's true. Though I would say that his panels are getting smaller and smaller. I mean, he used to have huge roundtables on his show, but there's fewer and fewer people in there.
It makes you wonder.
It does make you wonder. Yeah.
And I haven't watched one of his shows in a long, long time. So is it the panel of people that are actually on, or the people that are in the studio?
Well, what I've noticed is that he's really shifted a lot towards focusing on journalists.
Hmm.
I mean, if you look at a lot of his panelists, they're all like tech writers for TechCrunch or the New York Times or Wall Street Journal, or, you know, Fortune, or, you know, he's really shifted a lot of his guests towards tech journalists.
Right.
And I know he's put forth a real kind of news effort, you know, with the hiring of Mr. Mike Elgin, I believe is his last name.
Right.
And there's fewer, you know, pure technology media people there, right?
Yeah.
Guys that, you know, I mean, he used to have on, you know, like, you know, Kevin Rose and guys that were doing tech podcasts on his show a lot. And it doesn't seem to be doing that as much anymore.
Hmm. Dan asked me, example of instructional sessions you'd like to see, Todd. And I, you know, one thing that we had thought would be good would be a, you know, just optimizing stuff for WordPress, you know, not just PowerPress, but, you know, ways to optimize WordPress to get performance out of it. Those types of, you know, instructional stuff, and, you know, very easy stuff that people could implement, on their side, you know, and it's more now, I don't think we have to necessarily tell people how to use a microphone and do a recording, but I think it's important that we still have it at conferences, have the ability for people to come in and learn, you know, some of the basics and get tips and tricks and how to optimize their setups. And that could be optimizing audio, could be optimizing video, could be optimizing their WordPress sites, you know, stuff that really, you know, allows people to tweak, and even could be on design layouts of people's websites, you know, suggestions and, you know, and talk about do's and don'ts on web design. That stuff is all important. A lot of podcasters are starting to pay attention to it, but sometimes it's good to give them a little nudge from AKA experts in the field.
Mm-hmm. So I've been hearing a rumor here this week that Blog Talk Radio is going to be coming out with a huge update to their platform.
Well, they said they were working on it, so we shouldn't be surprised.
No, it's not a surprise. I just heard that it's coming here pretty quick. I don't know what that means.
They're probably trying to get it ready for NMX, aren't they?
I don't know. I don't believe that they're a sponsor of NMX. I don't even know that they're exhibiting it.
I think they're going to. Are they doing something with Podcast Movement, or was that their competitor?
I think that they are. Dan would know better.
Yeah,
than
he's
us.
In the chat room. I'm bringing up there. So let me look here.
Okay, so
yeah, they
Dan
are.
Is
they're
saying
one,
that
they are a sponsor. Yeah,
the Blog Talk Radio folks have been testing their HD version. It's their higher quality version, and Spreaker put out their new kind of live streaming and recording app for iOS here this past week as well, which got some news.
Yeah,
it was
some weird news. It was weird how they their press release writer, it was kind of odd. I think they could have made a bigger impact, but it just was written kind of odd. I had to read it like three times to understand what they were saying. So they maybe should have done two press releases, but it was a major announcement by them.
Yeah, I think it was just. It's kind of a app that basically enables you to just do kind of live creation of your podcast. You know, right. It has ways to add in, you know, kind of jingles and tracks and kind of like what, you know, the Boss Jock app kind of enables. But what's different is that you can publish directly to a live stream. And then that's recorded and then published as a podcast. So you can do like what you're doing, Todd, where you're a huge fan of live production. You know, it's a time saver and that kind of stuff. Yeah. So and it has a great kind of UI for the iPhone and the iPad.
Yep.
So.
Well, and there's a lot, you know, there's a lot of folks, you know, that I think there's still a place for content that's not necessarily created on a phone. A lot of people are doing that, but I don't know if that's the quality that, you know, what's kind of looking for these days. You know, it's the stuff sounds good, but it's not the same as, you know, putting it through a regular mic.
Yeah, I believe that they have coming a Mac and Windows version that can run on the desktop. So, and because that's where all the quality podcasts are being produced, right?
Right.
It's on Macs and PCs.
Yep.
So you have to have support for that kind of stuff.
Okay. Well, we're here at the end of the hour, and it's every Saturday I do interviews. So I got another interview in 10 minutes, Rob. So let's get out of here. And then I guess we'll just play it by ear for next week, and then definitely on the 4th. Yeah.
Well, let's shoot for Sunday.
Okay.
And I can try and maybe get Bob back again. Bob
All right.
Miles.
And I've got to get the ability for him to actually dial in if he needs to. Well, I haven't used that in a while. I'll have to test it. Won't have much time.
Oh, a phone?
Yeah, actually, believe it or not, I still have a phone bridge here, but I haven't had it hooked up in a long time. So I'd have to get it hooked up, but that could be an option for him.
Okay.
All right. Well, everyone, thanks for being here. You can reach out to us, Todd or Rob at newmediashow.com. And Todd at newmediashow.com or Rob at newmediashow.com. You can reach me on Twitter at geeknews. And Rob, what's the best way for them to reach you now?
If you want to follow me on Twitter at Rob Greenlee or on my website, robgreenlee2es.com is a great place. And send us emails. Let us know your thoughts on this, and jump in the chat room during our live show on Saturdays, and give us your feedback, and we'll talk about a lot of the things that maybe are of curiosity to you as a listener. So,
and if you have topics that you want us to cover, let us know that as well. And if you have a guest suggestion, we take those as often as we can too. So, from sunny, beautiful Honolulu, Hawaii.
In sunny Seattle, it's blue skies.
Everyone take care. We'll see you potentially next week here on the New Media Show. And join us at newmediashow.com. Everyone take care. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.